What's up, Beardos? You're listening to episode 191 of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Let me answer your question first by not answering your question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talk about beards.
Beards.
What does that mean, Paul?
The big beans and the big brown red bowl. Red bowl.
Who knows, Andy? I don't know.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com, and you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's mini-episode, we'll be asking the question, is it okay for restaurants to trick patrons into eating vegan meat?
Oh, Paul, I can't wait to dive into this one. I think it really calls back to the last couple episodes we've done and even the recent vegan wedding episode that we did. So I say this every episode, but I'm excited for this one.
I think it's going to be a real meaty conversation, Andy.
Paul, you were holding on to that one, huh?
But before we get into this stuff, Andy, we have a few announcements to make.
Yes, we do. So, okay, Paul, last week during our mailbag episode, we announced that every mailbag episode, we are going to pick a new organization or cause to donate to. Maybe one time it'll even be like a GoFundMe or something. And so in that episode, we announced that if you donate to whichever organization we have designated for that episode, which will be every 10 episodes, if you send us a screenshot of that, we will then double your donation up to $100. And we have already, Paul, we're recording this the same day that episode came out, but we've already received a few emails of people saying that they have made a donation to RACES, the Refugee and Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services, dealing all about the horrible situation with the immigrant concentration camps that are happening right now. And in addition to those couple of emails that we've received already with people sending in screenshots of their donations, we also got word from an anonymous donor who loved this idea and said, I would love to add on an additional $100 to the pledge every month. So now with the help of this wonderful anonymous donor, we are able to double all pledges up to $200 every single mailbag episode. So thank you, anonymous donor. I think we're pretty excited about this development in the podcast.
Yeah, I think this was, Andy, I'm surprised we didn't think about doing something like this before, but I'm glad that we've started doing it now because I think it's something that is important. I think it allows us to, not that we don't delve away from vegan issues, but it allows us to, you know, contribute outside of what our normal spectrum is in some way.
Yeah. And, you know, if you have suggestions on who you think is deserving of these donations, you can definitely always send those our way. And I'm sure some will be like this. I'm sure some will be. Maybe we'll do like Chili's on Wheels or something like that. I guess it'll really just kind of depend on what's going on in the country that needs a little bit of extra cash coming their way. But I'm excited for this because it's nice to be able to use some of the money that we raise from the show to help other folks out. So thank you, anonymous donor, and thank you to everyone that has already emailed us in screenshots of their donations to RACES. Still going on right now, so you can make those donations and send us your screenshots to thebeardvegans@gmail.com.
I know, Andy, it's pretty cool that like you said, we are recording this on Wednesday, the day that the episode came out, and we've already gotten a bunch of emails about it, which is heartening, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you once again. Okay, Paul, a couple of other quick announcements that I wanted to make. I've been doing this food and body shaming panel with JL Fields, and the very first two that we did were also joined by Ginny Messina, and I did a live recording of the one we did in Denver, Colorado at the Colorado Veg Fest last year, I believe. And put that out as a bonus episode and got really such a great response from that. And of course, you know, as things do, the news cycles change and things kind of die down. But we actually recently received an email from Ebony McCorkle, who wrote in and said that they've been doing sort of research on this, came across the recording of that, and felt that more people needed access to it. And so Ebony, on their own accord, went and made a transcription of that live panel that happened. So one, thank you, Ebony. Two, we've put a link to that. We've added it to anywhere where the episode is posted. So either on thecommentist.com in the show notes there or on the show notes of our Patreon as well. And we'll put a link to it again in the show notes for this particular episode. But I thought that was really cool that someone decided to just go and do that on their own accord. So again, thank you, Ebony. Link to that will be in the show notes. And Paul, I know this is a mini episode, so we're not talking about food, but I would be remiss if I did not give a very quick shout out to my good buddy, Dustin Harder, the vegan roadie, who just put out a new cookbook that I want to make every single thing that's in this cookbook. I feel like you would love every single thing that's in this cookbook. It's called Epic Vegan. And it's basically the concept is just over the top, super indulgent, a lot of like hybrid-y type things, like two kind of foods smashed together. Like there's a crab rangoon pizza recipe in there. And I was kind of like looking through the list of recipes, and there's like unicorn French bread pizza, cheesesteak baked potato bowl, double stacked cookie dough cake, like all of that kind of stuff that I think is always super Instagram worthy. So I don't know. I think Dustin makes such delicious food. I've had it both in professional and personal settings, and the book looks amazing. So I just wanted to give a quick shout out to that. You can order it wherever you find books. And it's called The Epic Vegan by Dustin Harder.
This, Andy, this definitely, I feel like, is filling this. Actually, you know what? I mean, I shouldn't say this because we are not in tune with the vegan YouTube scene, but Andy, I feel like both of us enjoy watching, or maybe I'm thinking of one of our other close friends that I enjoy watching these videos with, but those like gratuitous food videos that people post where it'll be like, I'm going to eat 150 Oreos and drink like 2 gallons of milk or so. You know, it's like people do these like food things. It's like food YouTube people that just, their whole thing is they just eat these ridiculous things. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Paul, I have never watched a video like that, so I guess I'm not as good of a friend as you thought I was.
Well, anyways, I enjoy watching these videos, and I've never seen a vegan one, and it seems like something where, Dustin, I'm just going to say this, if you're listening and you want to sponsor me to go through this cookbook and film myself making all these wild creations and eating them, just get in touch because I enjoy eating ridiculous things like this.
Paul, I would love to watch that. I'd also love to watch you learn how to cook.
I know, that'd be my main hurdle in this whole thing is.
Well, if only there was a book with step-by-step instructions and measurements on how to do these things, it might help out.
Touche.
Okay, from the Corrections and Omissions Department, Paul, I did follow up on my quick statement that you really drilled into last week, which was that, yes, in fact, Ireland has banned fur farming. They have not officially banned like the sale of fur, but obviously that is a blow to the fur industry. And apparently they're now the 15th country in the European Union to do so. So fur, we're coming for you. We're coming
for you. Andy, when is this fur ban going to go into effect?
It's gonna be phased in.
That's the official statement.
Okay, Paul. All right. So as stated, this is a mini episode, which means no food, no follow-up. We've kind of violated a little bit of that already, but we're gonna jump right into this main topic. Before we do that, though, huge thank you to our most recent Patreon donors, Laura H.
and Lucy T.
So thank you both very, very much for your contributions.
Thank you.
Wonderful folks like Laura and Lucy are throwing a couple bucks our way every month, and that lets us, one, pay for transcriptions, do upkeep on the podcast, and travel to our speaking engagements and all that good stuff. So and also now make donations to very worthy causes. So thank you very much to everyone that's doing that. In exchange, everyone that does so gets access to our Patreon feed, where we have 12 bonus episodes sitting up there right now. We got another one coming our way. We got another one coming your way soon, which I think is going to be very interesting. A couple people are asking for that one, a review of a TV show. Mm. And yeah, if you want to help us out, you can go to thebeardedvegans.com/beardo, which is spelled B-E-A-R-D-O. And you got all the options, including if you just want to get a shirt, something like that. But thank you to everybody that does help us out and support the podcast monetarily. We know not everyone is able to do so, but we certainly appreciate those that are willing and able to.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you very, very much.
All right, Paul. This should be fun because I think we kind of came down on different sides of a divide as to how ethical it is to feed someone meat that's actually vegan and just tell them, oh, this is meat, eat this thing. We had a bit of a disagreement there. And in the wake of that episode, we were sent this article by a number of listeners. Thank you to anyone that did send us this article. But Paul, here we go. From The Independent, pizzeria secretly swapped meat toppings for plant-based alternatives and no one noticed. This was published on June 28th. Let me read a little bit from this article. It starts out by saying the exact same thing as the title and then goes on to say, on Friday, June 21st, Hell Pizza introduced a new limited edition burger pizza advertised as featuring a, quote, medium rare burger patty as a topping. The company says more than 3,000 customers ordered it. According to the survey commissioned by the company, 70% of the customers said the patty tasted just like meat, and 80% said they were pleasantly surprised or unfazed by discovering it was plant-based meat. Some 70% of customers allegedly also said they would buy the burger pizza again. The company said it acted to, quote, start a conversation. A lot of people are instantly put off by the idea of fake meats, so we made the call to not reveal its meat-free origins because we were so confident people would enjoy it, Hell's Pizza General Manager Ben Cummings said in a statement. With more pressure on the plant's resources, we need to think about alternative food options, the statement adds. If covertly adding meat-free options onto a pizza encourages more people to be open-minded, we're happy to do that. But not all customers were equally happy, and some complained after the chain revealed the move. This is straight out pure deceit, one wrote in a Facebook comment below the video in which Hell announced the move. There are people who have reactions to certain vegetable-based products. So, Paul, this could not have been more timely. It came out right after that discussion about vegan weddings, of which we have a nice follow-up that we'll get to in a future episode. Let me actually read the Facebook post that Hell Pizza made. Were you one of the 3,000 people who've been completely fooled by our burger pizza? Featuring a delicious Beyond Meat medium rare burger patty tasting just like the real thing. We've been blown away by your responses. Taste just like meat? Check. Unfazed to eat a plant-based pizza? Check. Would buy again? Check. And then it says, if you're keen to try our burger pizza, you better be quick. It's only in store for a limited time. This post got 1,100 reactions. Most of them were just thumbs up, but 303 of them were hearts, 83 were angry, 40 got a wow, 36 got a laugh.
Wait, so are they, I guess I'm kind of confused because they're discontinuing this thing after making a statement that's like, we need to switch to more, we need to switch to these sorts of things. It's like, by the way, this is a limited time only, get it now.
I mean, Paul, how many times have you seen like McDonald's go, the McRib is back for a limited time only? You know, I bet it's one of those things where it really kind of hypes it up and they're going to continue to offer these types of things. I did come across an article in which I think it was the head of Hell Pizza. Great name, by the way. I have to imagine they must be a chain to sell 3,000 of these pizzas. They only offered it for like a week, I think.
I don't know. That number seemed low to me.
All right. Well, that's because they don't have one Paul Steller nearby ordering tons of pizzas every day. But I mean, this place is not vegan. Obviously, people went there expecting to eat something that was not vegan. And so I would imagine that they will add more vegan options, or perhaps they had vegan options on the menu. And I don't know, Paul, let's get into it. What do you think of this strategy? Is this a good way to win people over to want to continue to eat plant-based meats, or to, I don't even want to say the vegan cause, because it wasn't even a vegan pizza. I'm assuming it was, you know, cows-based cheese that was on there. What do you think of this?
Well, let's see. 80% of 3,000 people would be 2,400 people, which means about 600 people were either phased or unsurprised by discovering it was plant-based, which is a significant amount of people. But I don't know, I guess, because my initial reaction, much like with the wedding thing, is to be like, oh, this seems weird to me to be tricking people. But if the majority, if 80% like weren't bothered by it and 70% would buy it again, like, I guess it's not a terrible thing. I'm trying to think of any serious cons to it. And I guess the one would be some sort of allergen thing. But at the same time, it's like if someone had a serious allergy to something like soy or anything, that would be so common. Like, I feel like they would ask about those sorts of things just because some of those allergens are just in a lot of things anyways.
Well, that's interesting. I did do a quick bit of research on that. And there are some people that do have allergies to legumes. So the pea protein is the bulk of the Beyond Burger. And I'm guessing soy is a legume, right? That falls into that as well. And sometimes burgers are not 100% meat. You know, there's a lot of blends out there, especially like lower end, you know, consumer products that get put into restaurants and stuff like that. You know, it does feel like if someone had a deadly allergy, no matter what they were ordering, every single time you would disclose that, even if you're positive that there was no legumes in what you're ordering. I just got a pizza with some cheese and some meat and some onions or whatever it is. It feels like if you had a life-threatening allergy, you would probably mention that, but maybe not. Maybe there are people that operate in a way that's like, just like how I assume that if cilantro is not listed on the dang menu, Paul, that there's not going to be cilantro on my food when it comes out. But often I am wrong about that fact. So, you know, it's not a life-threatening thing for me, but I don't default to saying, is there cilantro on this every single time I order food anywhere, even if it's not listed on the menu?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to like allergen shame people and be like, they're the ones that should be putting in the work. But I feel like realistically in this day and age where I feel like it is rare to find a product that is especially like like a processed product where there isn't all this filler stuff in there. I feel like it would be unwise not to ask or not to check when you are like getting something new. But I don't know, I'm not someone that has to deal with this, but like, so I guess that's like the biggest to me. I guess that's the biggest like physical downfall of this. But then there's like the ethical side of it, which is like, should we be tricking people? And I guess I'm like, for some reason, Andy, I'm still hesitant to be on board with this despite seemingly overwhelming positive response. Of course, are they like, I don't know if they're over embellishing these sorts of things. I don't know. Are you like fully on board with it?
I think I am. I will say this, Paul. I know we've mentioned this on the podcast before, and I think we still would like to do an episode where we focus on vegan advocacy as a whole and sort of asking that question of how much deceit is too much deceit, how much deceit is unethical, how much of deceit is actually just effective persuasion, and where does that line exist, and how ethical are these things? And essentially, it's asking the question that I think you're maybe trying to get at here, which is the classic do the ends justify the means type of question. But this obviously is like much more pointed at a very specific type of deception. So we'll leave this in this mini episode and hopefully put a pin in it to return to a much more in-depth discussion at some point. But I guess it's hard for me to not be on board with it. And I want you to convince me that it's unethical. But like, yeah, like thinking of what are the downsides, and really the allergen thing. Yeah. Physically speaking, the allergen thing is the only thing that sort of screams out to me as like, ooh, this could have gone horribly wrong. if someone did not disclose that allergy. Now, that being said, oftentimes when you go to a restaurant and you look on the menu or look on the menu board or whatever, it says, if you have any allergies, please tell us so we can accommodate you.
Yeah.
And I feel like assuming that type of disclaimer was up there at Hell Pizza, that they would like legally be totally in the clear. Ethically, it may be a different topic, but don't you feel like that kind of just clears them of any potential wrongdoing?
Yeah, I guess.
From a legal standpoint?
Yeah, and also I think the one thing that does make me feel maybe a little bit better was that this was a, again, it's like, I don't know if this is getting at the main issue, but one thing that makes me feel better about the situation was that this was like they introduced a new thing. It wasn't like they switched something that they've been serving all along and didn't tell people. This was like, hey, we have this new pizza. Do you want to try it? And of course, I'm assuming it didn't say like try our like cow's beef hamburger patty, you know, pizza. Yeah. I'm sure the verbiage that it used in the article was like this medium rare burger patty, this burger disc. If it said that, then it would have really given it away. But this meat disc. But so I guess that makes me feel a little bit better that it's like that, like. It feels less deceitful, and it feels less deceitful and more like, in their defense, they could have just been like, well, you never asked. This is a new thing that we're giving you. It's like, you never asked what it was. You know what I mean?
Well, so Paul, their defense that I've seen in other articles is essentially like, we just called it a burger patty. Burger patties can be made up of multiple different things, including other animals. It doesn't have to be a dead cow that's ground up and shoved into this shape. It could be a turkey burger. It could be like a blend with some pork or cow's flesh or pig's flesh, rather. You know, like you're the one that assumed you were getting something, but we are accurate in our description. It was, in fact, a medium rare burger patty. How do you feel about that defense?
I guess it's maybe good in the sense that it's them trying to normalize the vegan, the vegan nomenclature, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's like normalizing this sort of language, you know, which I think is a good thing that this non-vegan place is trying to, I feel like this is especially noteworthy because this is in direct opposition to these big agricultural companies that are trying to sue so that vegan meats can't be called burgers and those sorts of things, you know? Like, yeah. I feel like it's the exact opposite. And it's probably a good thing that this is coming from a non-vegan place. So then it can't be seen as like, oh, this is just the vegans trying to do their vegan thing again. This is like a non-vegan place that's like, hey, a burger is a burger, my friend. Like, we gave you a burger pizza. You know, so I think in that sense, I'm kind of happy about that, that they're not that they, you know, they're not doing the and I feel like I kind of feel the same about the Impossible Burger. The Impossible Whopper at Burger King. Like, I'm glad that it's not called the Vegan Whopper. I'm glad it's called the Impossible Whopper, even though people, I feel like, well, maybe not, because we are definitely more in tune with these things than the general public, but I feel like it's again, it's like normalizing. It's like, oh, this is not just like a vegan version of this thing. This is like the Whopper. It's just like a different brand of the Whopper, you know? And I feel like those sorts of things can maybe help to normalize, that sort of language.
Well, Paul, like I went to a Burger King in Maryland in Baltimore recently and got to eat the Impossible Whopper. And I took a picture of the advertisement that is like plastered huge on the front window, and it says Impossible Whopper. And then there's a picture of the burger, of course, but then this like big giant stamp that says 100% Whopper, 0% beef. So they don't necessarily like scream plants, although there's like a little like small type at the bottom that says limited time only patty made from plants.
Limited time only.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they said about the, Impossible at White Castle, and then they started rolling out all these like special edition ones. So
that's true.
I feel like that's just like Paul, like when they say like this movie's coming out in theaters only to make you feel like you got to see it in the theater, you'll never be able to see it. But it just means that it's in theaters now, and eventually it'll be in your home, whatever. So I don't know. I don't pay too much heed to that. I think it's doing so well for them. I just saw an article from I think Grubhub that was saying that the Impossible Whopper is now like the most ordered late night snack in whatever markets it's in. So
that's wild.
So it's doing well. I mean, Paul, this is a tangent, but I knew this day would come, because despite me being incredibly pessimistic, I'm also incredibly optimistic. And my view is, if in 100 years, if we have not destroyed this planet, which I think our odds are not looking so good there, but if we have not destroyed this planet, we will live in a mostly vegan world, at least in populations with access and all of that stuff. And so it's like, of course, that is going to mean most likely large corporations like Burger King, at least for a time period before the downfall of civilization, they're going to have the Impossible Whopper, right? And so it's like, of course, this is going to come. But the actual act of getting in that drive-thru and ordering that thing and then just unwrapping a burger from Burger King and eating and having it taste very much like what I remember Burger King tasting like, which, by the way, one of the last things I ever ate before I went vegetarian was a quad stacker from Burger King, which is a ridiculous amount of meat. But it was just, I was like, I can't believe that this is the time that we're living in right now. Like, I can't believe that this is happening, because even 3 years ago, it didn't seem fathomable, like, that it was going to happen soon. And now the rate of acceptance of some of these vegan meats, the Beyond and the Impossible, is kind of mind blowing to me as someone who went vegan before Daya even existed.
Yeah. Brag.
Weird flex. anyway, let's get this back on track. Okay. So, Paul, I think it's totally reasonable, despite the sort of verbal gymnastics that they're doing, I think it's entirely reasonable that people assume that this burger would be made from cow's flesh.
Yes. Oh, I'm undoubtedly, everyone assumed that when they ordered it.
And so I think it's almost a little like, I appreciate the point they're making, but it's almost a little disingenuous to be like, well, you're the one that assumed that. Like, obviously they knew people would assume that, and that's the whole point of this stunt. So it does feel like just a little bit disingenuous. And I guess there's rumblings of a potential lawsuit happening. And that is one of the main points that's being brought up by the opposition, which is obviously people were going to assume this patty was made from cow's flesh.
Yeah. I do think that it's important. What they said is important, because I think like it can help shape people's views. I do agree with you that certainly no one thought that they were ordering a vegan pizza or a vegan topping.
Yeah. So I guess that even though I'm for this stunt, like, it's hard for me to not be for this stunt, because it's something I guess plays into the conversation about like what is ethical, what is not ethical, and what amount of unethical is actually okay in the pursuit of a just and righteous cause. And when I think about what is at stake, when I think about the animals that are dying every day, right, this very second as we're recording this, and do I feel like someone that feels like they're a little bit deceived by getting something that tastes almost exactly like what they thought they were going to get and has almost exactly the same nutritional profile, do I feel like that feeling of deception that they might have had, despite the fact that the vast majority of people were unfazed by this, is in any way comparable to what is happening to the animals? No, of course I don't. And then I guess the extension of that is, but is that going to make those people less likely to go vegan eventually? Or are those people like pretty unlikely to go vegan if they're so pissed off about this that it's like, that's fine, we weeded them out, we don't need to cater to them, let's go talk to the 70 or 80% of people that enjoyed this and were unfazed and said they would buy it again and work on them getting to go vegan?
Yeah. And I mean, would we be singing a different tune right now if it was 80% of people were extremely pissed off at this and 20% were like, yeah, this is okay? Like, would we then say, oh, this is just not an effective thing to do, so people should stop doing this.
Probably, but that's like what activism is. It's learning what works and learning what doesn't, and gauging public reaction. And I'm no math professor. I'm not studying to be a PhD math guy or whatever you do, master guy. 20% of 3,000 people is still a pretty good chunk of people.
Yeah, but I feel like there is something to be said about the fact that it is an overwhelming majority of people. Like, I feel like that's a good point to make. Like, hey, the majority of people were okay with this, you know? But
yeah, I mean, I guess, no, I agree with that, Paul. Like, if you're pissing off more people than you're winning over, and not that everything we do has to be geared towards winning people over, but this specific stunt obviously is geared towards that. It is geared towards getting people to go, oh, I love this, and it happened to be vegan. So I guess I'm on board with these vegan meats. Like, this one is a stunt that definitely relies on people to be won over. And the fact that the majority of people were won over and were unfazed, to me, is a huge win. And if that wasn't the case, we would readjust and go, okay, that's not a good option. Maybe there's a better option for this, you know?
Andy, I got a question for you. Can you think of a situation where this would not be cool to do, where switching meat with vegan meat would be like, you would look at that situation and say like, no, they should not have done this. Maybe for some, like, I don't know, culturally insensitive reason or something like that.
Well, yeah, I was kind of wondering if people were being told something was certified kosher, for instance, and then they were being fed the Beyond Burger, which as far as I know isn't, but maybe it is. Maybe I'm speaking totally uneducated on that, but the Impossible Burger was declared to be consumable and like cool under kosher law, you know. But
is that
something
what it says?
Like that,
cool under kosher, under kosher.
Yeah, it's a cool rabbi. I don't know, what am I saying? but yeah, I mean, something like that in which it deeply violates someone else's ethically held beliefs. And again, I know some people are like, yeah, but you're literally killing the animals, and that pales in comparison to, you know, violating someone's ethical beliefs in that regard, especially if you're not religious. People might say that that's not it's not comparable. But I think in terms of wanting to actually win people over, it does matter a lot. And so in a situation like that, I think it would be something that I would frown upon, just because, like, one, those, if it does not meet whatever, you know, cultural or religious criteria they need, obviously they're not going to continue to go purchase it afterwards. So it's kind of useless in that regard. But otherwise, it's hard for me to imagine a situation in which actual animal's flesh is switched out with vegan alternatives and it being uncool. Do you have a scenario in mind?
No, something like what you said. I was thinking, like, if there was some situation, I'm sure it seemed like it would be maybe some like religious related situation.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that a lot of people that were in opposition to this were like, well, how would you vegans like it if we fed you something and that you thought was vegan and turns out it actually wasn't, and we tricked you in that regard? You would hate that. And that means that's the exact same thing as what's happening here. How do you respond to that, Paul? Go.
Well, I think so, Andy. I think that this is what I was trying to think of, because this is what I was trying to think of an example of, because the reason why that's not a good comparison is because for the majority of people, going to a fast food place and eating a hamburger is not like a part of their ethical code. It's not a part of their ethical beliefs. It's not ingrained in their morality, versus for many people, veganism is a part of their ethics. That lifestyle, they're living a lifestyle in accordance with their ethics. So I feel like in that reverse situation, for the majority of vegans, because not all vegans are ethical vegans, but for many vegans, I feel like it would be violating their ethics. And that would be the thing, like, it would be tricking someone into doing something against their ethics, which I think is a terrible thing. And that's what I was saying, where I was trying to think of some example where that would be the case for what happened here, which I wasn't really able to think of. But Certainly for even Andy, even the 20% of people who were not cool with this, I would wager a guess that for the majority of those people, the majority of those 20% of the dissenters, that it wasn't some ethical reason that it violated it. They just, for whatever, for one reason or another, like either do not like vegan stuff or do not like the idea of eating vegan stuff or don't like being tricked or something like that, rather than like some ethical held belief.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And again, this just seems like a theme that's popped up so much in our recent episodes, which is people that want to, and this in this case, non-vegans, but we've been talking about vegans that want to do this, but people want to boil down one action to being inherently good or inherently bad. And context matters. And I think you totally nailed the context of why those two things are not comparable and why it's really laughable that anyone would say that those two are the exact same thing. Okay, Paul, I feel like we've probably thoroughly exhausted this, but I guess like definitively, are you for or against this stunt?
Oh, you gotta make me say something definitively. I would say, Andy, if you made me say yes or no, I would say I am for it.
All right, Paul, we're in agreement.
Damn you, Andy.
I feel like I'm probably more enthusiastically for it, but it's, I don't know. Again, it gets towards a larger conversation of like, do people deserve comfort? Do people deserve protection from seeing graphic images or deserve not to be deceived by plant-based meats or things like that in the face of the absolute horrific situation that is happening for animals on this planet? I think that is something we can definitely get at in a larger conversation during a main episode at some point.
Yeah. The Bearded Vegans, referencing future discussions.
Put that in our file, our Google Doc of 7,000 reference discussions to bring up at some point. I don't know. Send us in your thoughts on that. Like, let us know what angles we could take with that, because we're still kind of forming that one right now. It's still a primordial ooze right now.
So, Andy, this is an instance where a restaurant was tricking people into eating vegan meat instead of cow's flesh meat. But what about a situation where the patrons wanted to be tricked into possibly eating plant-based meat?
Surely such a situation does not exist, Paul.
Andy, I'm bringing this to you from LBB Online. Don't know what that is. LBBOnline.com from July 3rd, a mere week ago from the time of this recording. Burger King's 50-50 menu won't tell you if you're eating plant-based or not. And let me read this article. It's pretty short. And this is in Sweden only, unfortunately. Well, maybe not unfortunately. I don't know. We'll see. TBD. Burger King Sweden recently launched two new plant-based burgers, Rebel Whopper and Rebel Chicken King. And according to Burger King, they taste so similar to real meat that you won't notice any difference. To prove it, the restaurant, alongside creative agency Ingo Stockholm, is now introducing the 50-50 menu, a menu that will randomly select either a plant-based or a regular meat patty. Rebel Whopper and Rebel Chicken King rolled out in Sweden last week and will soon launch in other countries across Europe. Rebel Whopper is basically a classic Whopper with a plant-based patty, and Rebel Chicken King is a copy of a crispy chicken. If you order the 50-50 menu, you'll get a box with either a regular Whopper or the new Rebel Whopper. Nothing will give away which one you got. If you really want to know what you had, you can scan the box in the Burger King app to find out, but you have to guess before you get the answer. The 50-50 menu is available on all restaurants in Sweden. And there was like a little picture of it. So I guess of the app, so you scan it and then it said like, do you think you had the, and then you had to either check one of the boxes or the other. Andy, I'm just going to say this. I'm for this. I'm into this.
I mean, like I don't love it obviously because it still involves the use of animals. Like that's the one thing that kind of throws a wrench in the works for me. But I guess that pizza they were talking about still used animals because of the cheese. But so that's like the only thing that makes me not wholeheartedly endorse it. But I guess with the premise that the person buying it, because obviously they're okay with eating animal's flesh, would have 100% been buying animal's flesh then. The fact that some of them will be replaced with the plant-based version, I'm obviously for that. And I think that, I mean, Paul, back in the day, even as the most staunch meat eater, I feel like I would be all over this if this was an option to me back in the day.
And you said some might be replaced. I will say 50% will be replaced.
So, Paul, you want to know what my little conspiracy-minded head is thinking right now?
They are all vegan burgers.
All vegan, baby.
I'm going to say that that's not true because I feel like people would catch on to that very quickly.
Well, they'd have to buy a lot of burgers first before they figured it out.
But if, like, for instance, if you and your friend, like you and your four friends got them and you did it twice and 10 and all 10 burgers were vegan, I feel like you'd be like, oh, they're literally just giving us vegan burgers.
What if, Paul?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this would be diabolical. What if they're all plant-based burgers, but the app randomly chooses which one you think you got? Right.
Oh my.
Because then if it says real burger and you ate it, you'd be like, wow. Like, you know, you'd be like, yes, the burgers are good. I like, you know?
Yeah.
And then if it says it was plant-based, I don't know. I guess the biggest upside is if they said it was actual cow's flesh, but then you might just continue to go eat cow's flesh. But what if, I don't know. I have not thoroughly thought out this scenario, Paul.
That is wild, Andy. You literally just put that into my head with no, like, I did not conceive of that at all prior to this, but I feel like that would certainly be interesting. My one thing that I'm wondering, I mean, I don't think they would be doing this if they weren't confident about this, but I wonder if there's like a slight difference in how they look, you know, in how like the inside looks. And I'm wondering if like someone would be able to just tell like after they, I mean, they're so convinced that they have this app and stuff like that. So that, I mean, they must expect people to be looking at the burger and not just tasting it. Yeah. So maybe it does look very similar, or maybe there's enough stuff around it that it looks similar.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's been a minute since I've looked at an actual cow's flesh Whopper, but what I got at first, I was like, I was worried. I was worried that I got the wrong thing at first, you know, despite all the packaging and all that stuff. So,
despite the little flag,
there was sadly no little flag.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Andy, can I tell you why I love this?
Please.
I love this because I think that it's 2019. People are all gamification, Andy, is the name of the game. Making things into games, making things into challenges. Like you just said, you said it, Andy, one of the first things you said was if you were still eating meat, you would be all over this. I would be too, because this is like, it's even if I was someone who was like against vegan, eating vegan meats, like as a non-vegan, even if I was against eating vegan meats, I feel like I would be like, oh, they're challenging me to this thing. Of course I have to do this. I feel like, and then the layer of the app, like, which is also genius for them because they're forcing you to download their own app, which is, I would expect Burger King to have a good marketing team, so it makes sense. But like making you download this app, it like takes it this step further. It gets you like really involved in this thing. But it also like, I'm thinking like in the app, what if it keeps track of how many times you guessed right or wrong, you know, like different ways to kind of keep a score or something like that. It's just like, even at this base level of what it is, it's making it into a game. And I feel like that is a genius idea. And that's going to promote, I think, a lot of people that would normally just get the regular burger to try the 50-50 thing. You know, it's like, because we can also say maybe one of the downfalls is obviously the vegans are going to get the vegan burger. Maybe one of the downfalls is people who are on the fence that might have gotten the vegan burger anyways are now going to be like, oh, this is kind of a fun thing. Let me try this, and then possibly not get the vegan burger. But to me, I think that the potential of getting people who would in no way ever just order the plant-based burger on its own, I think it has enormous potential to get those people to try the vegan burger.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I think also this is just, it's a brilliant marketing technique and it's a brilliant marketing like research and development strategy when they have to get people to guess, you know, and they're able to like roll out these like massive nationwide, I'm guessing, taste tests on how realistic is this thing. And obviously that's like market research. I don't think the benefit for them as a company, like obviously Burger King doesn't care about animals at all. I don't think the benefit for them as a company is just even the momentary press that they're going to get for this, the momentary bump in sales they're going to get for this. But I think that the benefit is that they are going to know if they have perfected this burger or not. And also I'm sure that there's gonna be a marketing campaign that's like 95% of people couldn't tell the difference kind of thing. So
yeah,
I think very slick Burger King.
I wonder what the meat is also. Like because they're using a chicken. So obviously they have some chicken that they're claiming is realistic enough to fool people. And I'm curious. Got to take a trip to Sweden, Andy.
Well, Paul, if you do that, you can take in a nice midsummer festival as well.
Nice.
All right, Paul. I guess that's two interesting experiments in deception / convincing people that vegan food is actually good.
Yeah.
Part of me is hesitant to be praising of any of this stuff because it is all playing into like sort of a larger destructive capitalistic system. But I do think that so much of people's mindset shift does start with them realizing that they can still have their everyday comforts when they go vegan, mm-hmm. or at least when they go plant-based. And I think to ignore that aspect of the whole conversation is missing out on a crucial component, because I feel like you can tell people why they should go vegan till you're blue in the face, and some people will listen. But more people will be more receptive once they realize that they're not going to be a total like weirdo outcast. And, props to all of us early adopters out there. But I think that we also need to be making sure that we are helping along those that are more hesitant than we personally were when we were at that point.
Nice, Andy. And of course, we want to hear what you all think about this. Is this completely a bad thing, this 50-50 thing? Is it unethical for Hell Pizza to be tricking people? We want to know what you think. So send in your thoughts and comments into thebeardedvegans@gmail.com, and we would love to hear from you. Andy, at the time we're recording this, we have not done the Atlantic City Veg Fest yet. At the time you're listening to this, dear listener, we have done the Atlantic City Veg Fest. So hopefully that went well. But in addition to all those things, Andy, what do people have to look forward to where they can see you or us?
Well, Paul, this coming weekend, Hamden, Connecticut, our home state, our beloved home state, I'll be at the Compassion Fest, 5th annual in Hamden, Connecticut. Should be a fun, very fun time. July 25th and 27th, I'll be at the Animal Rights Conference in Washington, D.C. And just got word one Professor Paul Steller might make a guest appearance on one or more days.
Yeah.
August 10th, I'll be at the Pittsburgh Veg Fest, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. August 11th, D.C. Veg Fest, Washington, D.C. And August 17th and 18th, the Triangle Veg Fest, Durham, North Carolina. On August 18th is the day we are doing another live podcast. So be on the lookout for more information for that soon. You can find all those dates, deeds, and links at CompassionCo.com, which is my vegan clothing line. And if you want to pick up a shirt, you can, but you can certainly come by any of the Compassion Co. tables at all the events I just listed. Say what's up, Beardo, and we will hook you up with a button or sticker. And maybe we'll talk about food and arrange an escape room.
Sounds good.
I feel like it's been a minute since I've mentioned escape rooms on the podcast, so I just had to maintain my brand.
I love you, Andy.
I love you too, Paul. 50-50 chance. Those are like pretty good odds. Those are what, black and red odds for that roulette table that you love so much.
Yeah, that I failed that one time that
you lost my $20 on. I think it was $20. I personally prefer a more sure bet, something that is 100% sure. And I am 100% sure that you are about to say the following seven words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off. What are people suing them for?
Like misleading. It's not, I don't know if it's, Don't make me do research, Paul.
Okay. All right. Scratch that.
Oh, did you have a good transition?
Yeah. I was, so, okay. Andy.
Yes, Paul. All right, Paul. Two interesting.
What are they, Andy? You know what I think of those 20% of people, Andy?
I hope a sick burn is coming.
No, not a sick burn. I was going to say they remind me of that, the Chris Farley sketch.
We should put a link to that in the show notes so people can watch it. Cause I feel like that's one of the lesser known Chris Farley.
Andy showed me, I can't even pretend that I knew about this because Andy literally just showed me this like 2 or 3 weeks ago and I watched it many times on repeat.
Do you want to describe it for the listeners that are in the dark?
I would say just YouTube what Chris Farley SNL coffee. That probably would get you to it.
Yeah. Or perhaps Chris Farley, you lied to me.